I could go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 13 minutes after 1 p.m., March 22nd, 2012. Says 1 a.m., but we're not going to be driving that hard, by God. And here today this afternoon we have Co-Chair Hoffman, Olson, Thomas, Egan, McGuire, myself, Stedman, and we're going to continue on with PFC Energy's presentation dealing with Senate Bill 192. We have some updated charts to respond to questions from senators earlier today. So if we can have Janik go ahead and introduce himself again for the record, who he represents, and then maybe start with the updated slides and then reference the slide numbers so we can kind of follow, because we got to jump around a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Janik Mayer, manager in the upstream and gas practice of PFC Energy and project manager for this engagement that we are undertaking for the legislature, advising on oil and gas fiscal term reform issues. To pick up where we left off before the break, we had stepped through the existing oil allowance, the new oil allowance in the existing form of CSSB 192, which is a $10 allowance for new production above a level that a producer previously produced in the last year. We saw that even assuming a hypothetical 100,000 barrel a day development, a very, very large development of a size that's unlikely to happen any time in the foreseeable future, that the impact of that, this is on slide 30, was negligible. We saw that if we raised that to $20 and extended it not just for a single year for each increment of production, but for a full 7 years, that we start to see a little more effect, particularly in terms of the net present value of the project, but in particular the overall impact on rates of government take remains really very minor, maybe a single percentage point in a few instances, but that's about it. And similarly, we saw a slightly greater impact when the allowance was increased to $60 oil and extended over 7 years, but still relatively muted even in this fairly extreme case of a hypothetical 100,000 barrel a day new development on top of existing production. At the time, Senator Hoffman asked me a question about not having included an analysis of just new production from a non-existing producer. I said at the time that having looked at the numbers previously, I thought the impact was relatively similar, perhaps slightly more. Over the course of the break, I went back and looked at that analysis again and thought it worth including those slides, because particularly in the more extreme cases, if we take that credit, that allowance all the way up to $60 and extend it for a full 7 years, it does start to have quite a noticeable impact in the case of a new producer with no existing production. Now, I would caution in reading those results that from the outset we're dealing with a hypothetical here of a very, very large field development, a hypothetical that was come up with solely because on an existing production base, to even register incremental new production, one needs to start with a field that big. But this is, in that sense, a hypothetical constructed to meet that scenario, not reflective of anything we're likely to see in the near future. But with that disclaimer in mind, we can see here on slide 33 what this hypothetical large new development for a non-existing or for a new producer looks like. What it looks like with a $10 allowance over 1 year, again, around a single percentage point in government take difference. A modest difference in net present value for the project and no real difference in rates of return that we see for the project. If we take that up to $20 and extend it over 7 years, we see perhaps a 2% difference in government take over the previous. And project present value starting to rise significantly and even, in this case, an impact on rates of return. And finally, if we take that all the way up to $60 and keep it extended over the full 7 years, we do actually then start to see total government take fall, particularly in the high cases, from originally around 80% down as far as 74%. So in these particular circumstances, if an allowance on this line is made as large as this and extended as long as this and is not on the basis of declining production but solely for a new producer, under those specific circumstances, one can see a significant reduction in government take using this method. But I would reiterate that in almost all circumstances that we can see happening in the near-term future, particularly in an environment where most incremental production that might be brought on is likely to be brought on by existing producers from new investments in existing areas, and is likely to be well below the threshold required to register as new production under the terms that are currently included in CSSB 192, that under those terms, which ultimately are the thing that CSSB, that any bill needs most to incentivize, under those terms, it continues to have no impact at all.
Do we have any follow-up questions on... So you want to go ahead and repeat your conclusion again?
The principal conclusion, Mr. Chairman, is that in the terms that matter most, that is to say, for the purposes of incentivizing new investments by existing producers, new developments that would start to raise the decline curve from the current 6% to something less than that, the new oil incentive under CSSB 192 has no impact at all. For a hypothetical, very large development on the basis of a declining base, if the allowance is raised substantially, say from $10 all the way to $60, if it's extended not just for 1 year, but for 7 years, it starts to have an impact. But it's still really quite a minor one. The only circumstances under which it could conceivably have an impact would be for a brand new producer with no existing production, and therefore no base decline to compensate for, and a case where it were dramatically increased and extended for the full 7 years. That is the sole circumstance I could see under which any combination of changes to that particular structure, where new oil is incentivized based on previous year's production, could have any significant impact. To move on to the next slide, which is slide 37 on screen, it may be numbered differently in the printouts since there have been inserts since, but it's titled, once again, CSSB 192, excluding new oil allowance. To look now at the tax holiday proposal that has been put forward and examine the impact of that. It's best perhaps to start by explaining for a moment the mechanism under which the tax holiday works, which is that where the existing proposal in CSSB 192 establishes essentially a target rate of production based simply on what was last year's production by the producer and incentivizes in the current year production above that level, the tax holiday does something similar, but the target level is not set at last year's production level, but is rather set at last year's production level less a decline factor. That decline factor is set based on a moving average of the prior 3 years' production and prior 3 years' decline. So, for instance, if I had a steady 6% decline over my prior 3 years' production, my target for this year would be last year's production less 6%. If I exceed that target, the tax holiday provides not just a dollar per barrel allowance, but rather essentially an exclusion from production tax value of all revenue coming from production that exceeds that target level. And as far as it does that, if we look, if we compare it, looking, comparing like to like in terms of production for an existing producer from a declining base with the 1 year $10 allowance currently in CSSB 192. By contrast, the tax holiday proposal has at least a noticeably greater impact than that. So, for instance, if we start with this slide simply of 192 without any annual allowance and now look at the tax holiday, it's still a very minor impact, but we have a slightly greater impact on net present value and a few other metrics. We still can't see any noticeable change. It's less than a percentage point in government take figures.
Can you just stop there for a minute? I'm having trouble finding it in these slides. I've got 33 or 34 is what I've got. Now we've got page numbers that are duplicate. And we'll have a brief of these. Record. Sorry for the inconvenience, Ed. My binder here, I'm working on that so I can follow along because I don't get to watch what's behind me.
My apologies for having messed up the slide order with the additional slides.
That's fine. So tell us what we have here on page 38, my page 34.
On page 38, we have the impact of the tax holiday as currently modeled, as currently proposed. As I say, it entails, at this point, only a very slight increase in overall project value, and again, a less than 1% decrease in total government take across almost all price decks. The reason for that, again, is that while, on the one hand, the tax holiday proposal, by working off a decline curve rather than last year's production, overcomes part of the difficulty created by that issue, it still applies only for a single year. So if I manage 10,000 barrels a day of production above my target rate, which is last year's production less my decline rate, I have my tax holiday this year for those barrels. But that tax holiday is gone next year. And not only is that tax holiday gone next year, but because that decline rate calculation is based off a rolling average, where previously I had a 6% decline, as I start adding incremental new production, I also start flattening my decline curve, making it flat and even, in the case of genuinely adding new production, negative. And so each year that I add incremental production, I make it harder for myself to ever receive the tax holiday again in the future. If we do the same thing for analytical purposes as we did to the previous proposal, which is to say, rather than have the tax holiday be just for 1 year, if it were to be extended for 7 years, what would the impact of that be? We can do that, and on the next slide, we see that that is more significant. There we get at least a full percentage point of decrease in government take, as well as a more significant increase in present value for the project, and for the first time we can actually see the cash flow line on the chart in the upper left move slightly. Still, however, the impact is relatively muted. If we move on to the next slide, slide 40, we show the same series of analysis of three slides for a new producer with no existing base. Once again, very little impact of the tax holiday based solely on the three-year rolling decline when it applies only to a single year, but a significantly greater effect when it's extended for 7 years. So, for instance, a reduction of around 2 percentage points of government take in certain circumstances.
These slides are going way too fast, and I can't find them in here, so we're going to have to slow way down. That's otherwise terrible. It's just meaningless information.
The slides on the screen should be the same numbers for these as the ones in your deck, and that's 40, 41, and 42.
They're not.
So we'll just have to slow down on your slides, so then if we can't find them, we'll just have to watch your slide.
Slide 40 is currently on the screen. It should be. Go back a few minutes. Just go back about 2 seconds.
Yeah, they are now 40, 41, and 42 are in my book now.
I've got 37. That's not right, neither.
I could tap all the new pages, so you know which ones are new.
Oh, I don't know. We'll have a brief at ease. Okay, let's come back on the record. Again, sorry for the delay. We just had some new slides generated at lunchtime, so we're logistically getting all that straightened out. But if we could back up a little bit, Janik, and then pick up the conversation, would be appreciated. So make sure everybody's following, particularly myself.
If I start with slide 40 of the new slide deck added at lunch, this is simply what CSSB 192 with no new allowance looks like for a new producer with no previous production. If I move to slide 41, I see the impact of the tax holiday proposal based on a production above a 3-year rolling decline rate. As we can see, there's really very little impact on the overall level of government take and only a very minor impact on the present value of this particular project. The reason for that is that while the tax holiday proposal improves in one respect on the allowance for new oil as is currently in CSSB 192 by basing the target threshold above which production must rise in order to be considered new production on a decline rather than simply based on the previous year's production, there are two shortcomings. One is the problem of the fact that the tax holiday exists only for 1 year. In any given year, the amount of production above the decline is likely to be relatively small, and the benefit of a single year when measured over the life cycle of the project means that its impact both on project economics and on the overall level of government take across that life cycle is very muted, to the point, in fact, that it can't be discerned here in the levels of government take percentage figures that we see. We can apply something conceptually similar to what we applied in the case of the $10 allowance, which is to say, well, what would happen if instead of the tax holiday being for 1 year, it would last for the same 7 years that we examined the allowance under? And the answer to that is it's a more significant increase. We can see in those early project years a jump in the after-tax cash flow line of this particular project. We can see a substantial improvement in the present value and even a slight improvement in the rate of return at the $100 level here. And we can see a reduction in government take of a percentage point or two in comparison to what we saw on slide 41 and slide 40. That said, while the impact here is noticeable, it remains relatively limited. And I want to turn to the next slide, if I could, in the original slide deck on differences in incremental production to to explain why that is. If we start, for instance, with the middle band of these, which is incremental production above the prior year production, we have in the first line of that incremental band target production being the previous year's production, and then in the case of the asset in which we're looking at in these prior analysis, the amount of production in any given year that is...
We're going to have a brief, Addies. We've got to have time for the guys to find... Go ahead, Janik, if you could start over again on this slide, please.
Certainly. If we start by looking at the middle band of data shown on this slide, incremental, which is, that is to say, the data that underlies an allowance based on production above the previous year's production. In other words, what is currently in CSSB 192. The first line here, target production, is essentially, for the assets that we've been looking at here, production in the previous year from that portfolio. The next line down is, given that baseline, how much did we produce in that year above the target rate? As we can see here, it's, in each case, a very small amount. And similarly, if we look at that on a percentage basis, it's a very small percentage above that target rate. If we look, for instance, instead at how that calculation is done in the case of the tax holiday, where it's based on a three-year rolling decline, that's the top band of this slide. We can see that the target production in each case is lower than it would be when the assessment is based on production incremental to the previous year's production. And we can see as a result that our production above the target in those first couple of years is greater than it is on the incremental basis, greater than it is under the current new oil allowance in CSSB 192. However, because we have produced above our target in the first couple of years, and because the decline rate test is on that rolling three-year average basis, what happens to the three-year rolling decline rate is critical here, because we start with a 6% decline. After a year of additional production, we're down to a 4% decline. After another year of additional production, we're down to a 1% decline. And by the third year of this fantastic new production that is slowing our production decline, we've lost all benefit from the tax holiday, because the simple act of creating new production means that our decline curve has gone away, and we therefore have very little new production anymore above that decline. So that's where the problem in doing things that way lies. The third band here is for an alternative method that's not one of the other two proposed, and the subsequent slides will look at this in a little more detail. The third band here says, well, what if we simply say our target production is set by looking at last year's production now at this point in time? So here in 2012, what was produced in 2011? If from that point onwards we project out indefinitely into the future a given decline curve, let's say, for example, 6%, and we make that our target production, that's the line that you're seeing at the top of that third band of data here. And you can see, of course, by doing things that way, each year that we have new production, we can actually see what that incremental new production is above the decline rate, above that 6% decline, and each year it gets more and more because, relative to the decline rate, more volumes that are incremental to that 6% decline are being brought on. And if some form of incentive is applied to that, then we actually get a meaningful incentive for new production on that basis.
So on that concept, how do you... My understanding of this decline curve is it's a parabolic curve, you know, flatten out. How do you deal with the flattening? And then, as a separate question, don't you eventually just walk underneath the current production, so all the production in the future would be classified as new production. I mean, if we extrapolated that out beyond 220, a few more years, we'd have 82%, would be pretty soon almost 100%.
Certainly, there's no question that as one moved into the future, more and more production would fall under the banner of new production in that sense. It's equally true to say that as one moves into the future, more and more production would be from those sources that would be invested in today. If there are a number of ifs around this. If we say that at the moment we're experiencing a 6% decline, and without significant new investment, we'll continue to do so, then that line in the target production line is essentially reflecting what that would look like carried out into the future. If we say that we would like to incentivize new production above that with preferential terms, then by definition, if one is successful in doing that, then that new production over time becomes more and more of the base portfolio, absolutely. If one wanted to put a time limit, therefore, on some aspect of that benefit, that is certainly something that could be examined. But if what one wants to do is fundamentally lower the level of government take and improve the economics of new production as opposed to old, that incentive can't be one that applies for a year or 2 years or a short period of time, because project economics are ultimately run across the life cycle of a project.
One of the challenges we have is to know where this parabolic curve is going to flatten out. And, you know, hypothetically, I guess if we were already in the flat spot, we'd be having pretty flat production. Maybe it'd only be going down a couple of percent a year. And we've had some forecasts showing us we're pretty close to a flattening of the production versus a continual decline to the basement. So I'm wondering how do we reconcile that?
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me there are two parts of that question. One is, how do we get an accurate view looking forward as to what we expect this curve to look like? And that's a detailed question for reservoir engineers and other people that I am not capable of answering. And one of the difficulties, it seems to me there are a number of strengths, if one were to follow such a method, of following it. One of the difficulties is to decide exactly what that decline rate should be and how it should be calculated. Is this an exponential decline? Is this a hyperbolic decline? What's the best curve fit to put to this? There are a number of cases where exactly a method such as this has been applied in fiscal regimes in experience. Most of them that I'm aware of have happened in the cases of production sharing contracts. And precisely because in production sharing contract agreements, changes to fiscal term occur through a contract mechanism and therefore are negotiated between the producer and the government, our experience is certainly that those negotiations on this issue can be very complex and difficult, precisely over this question of understanding what is actually the base decline we're talking about over which new production should be incentivized. To the extent that since this is not a production sharing contract regime, since changes to these terms are not ones that are negotiated in contract negotiations between producers and the government, in some ways, were one to enact a system like this, it would be less complex than that, but one would need to come to a better conclusion regarding what exactly that decline curve should be and how exactly it should, mathematically speaking, it should be modeled, whether it should be an exponential or hyperbolic decline, and based on the mathematics of that, we'll tell you at what point one sees the curve flattening out.
But wouldn't we have to have separate decline curves for each of the major three companies, because they all have different percentages and different exposures between Prudhoe and Kuparuk and the other fields within those units?
Details like that are exactly the aspect of an allowance like this that would be most difficult to finalize. In principle, a single decline curve applied to all, on the one hand, compared to the current system, would still provide a substantial incentive to anyone. It may, however, provide a lopsided incentive to some versus others based on what that decline curve looks like compared to their actual production. And in that sense, yes, a more tailored decline curve for each producer would be a better arrangement, though a more difficult one. There may also be a need to augment a system like this with other definitions of new production. For instance, one could have a system where one measure of whether production was incremental or not was on the basis of production above an existing decline rate, but other definitions could also apply. So, for instance, production from new areas or production from agreed plans of development with the regulator that at some point the state took a look at and certified as, yes, we agree that this is new production. There are a number of ways on which one can make that call of whether production is new production or not, and production above a base decline curve is just one of those.
Because if we do go in with a kind of two tax structures, one for current production and then one for the incremental production, it looks like under this one, and it's just preliminary kind of a concept here on the table, but it looks like a lot of the remnants of the current production would end up falling in the incremental tax zone. Is what I'd be one of the things I'd be curious about, the mathematics dealing with the decline curve. How do you keep them separate so we don't make a structure that looks good in 2012, but we get up in 2020 and it's a whole different ballgame. And we've got everything in the other more lenient structure, tax structure.
Mr. Chairman, I think that is a very valid concern. The one thing I would say to it is, if one has set the decline curve prudently, to the extent that that occurs, it occurs precisely because the production one is seeing in 2020 is new production over and above the decline that one was trying to... It's precisely because of the success of the policy, in other words.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Janet, you and I were talking a little bit, but just if you could expand on this in other jurisdictions that you have worked on this concept. And what you indicated to me is they're largely, how you've dealt with it is where it's a production sharing agreement, so it's by contract. It's always difficult when you try to look at what the decline rate will be. If you could talk a little bit about that, and then have you worked with any governments that set that as a policy, either setting a decline base rate or defining new production in a certain way, or the final approach that you recommended, which is approval of plans of development? And if you could just share any of those experiences with us.
I'm certainly aware of a number of governments that have taken an approach to production contracts of a variety which incentivize production above a plateau or above a base rate. For instance, if we look, for instance, at any of the recent service contracts in Iraq, they are all about existing producing fields and providing, in this context, incentives for producers through a service contract, monetary reward for incremental barrels above an existing plateau or decline rate. Similarly, PFC itself has worked with a particular government in the Middle East and with a number of the producers. I believe it's Bahrain. On exactly this issue of negotiating production above a particular decline curve, and definitely that can involve significant contractual intricacies in terms of how to negotiate those precise terms. As I say, in a tax royalty regime, in principle, where the terms are simply set by the legislature, that is potentially a much simpler question.
And if I just follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate that. In that case, did you, or how is it too new to know, did you experience any of the concerns the chairman's discussing, to the extent that you want to have one group of barrels of oil treated a certain way and another treated another way in new production, those old barrels begin to migrate into the sort of new as a result of that curve changing. Have you experienced that?
Senator McGuire, through the chair. I'm not sure the best way of understanding it is to think of it as old barrels migrating into new barrels. Because if our starting point is of saying we face declining production, if for the moment we're using the hypothetical figure of 6%, we say we face a 6% decline, then by definition our existing production is going to decline by that rough rate year on year on year. And yes, if we have successive new production above those volumes, and we're successful in doing that year after year, then progressively, if that new production is taxed at a preferential rate, then progressively over time, more and more of the production base will be taxed at the preferential rate and less at the higher rate. But that is precise. That, in that hypothetical scenario, that would be entirely a result of the success of the policy, which is in stimulating production above the 6% decline rate.
Okay, my final two. On the other two that I asked about, that's a great, great point. I wholeheartedly agree. If you were to go for the approach of defining new development or having the state of Alaska approve plans of development, almost a bit like production sharing agreements, it sounds like to me that the state would approve these plans of development with favorable tax terms associated with them. Could you give me any examples of experiences in those two areas that you've had?
I don't have concrete examples to share with you, I'm afraid, Senator, through the chair. I could say, on that latter question you raised, though, of plans of development, of course, plans of development are, at the moment, all lodged with the Department of Natural Resources, and so in that sense, something like that could be made part of the existing regulatory process. Were that an avenue one wanted to explore?
Yeah, with favorable terms. Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
If we look in the final few slides at what such an allowance might look like, if we start again looking at the existing producer with incremental new production, the large additional field, and no allowance, if we examine, for instance, what an allowance based on just 20% of gross revenue above a fixed decline rate would do to project economics and to overall levels of government take, we immediately see a significant difference. Our government take in the highest cases goes, I'm toggling back and forth between slides here, but in the first slide we were looking at from 79% at $230 or 74% at $100, down to 75% at $230 or 69% at $100 level. Similarly, we see a significant increase in net present value. If, and again, this is not particularly something I recommend, but simply for the purposes of analysis to show how this can work, that allowance were increased to 40% of gross revenue, one would then see a further reduction in government take down into the mid-60s and up to the 70% level. For overall, with significantly probably lower government take than that applying to the new and the higher rate applying to the base. At this point, this is simply one possible direction that I wanted to put before the committee as something that works on a similar basis to the other proposals that the committee is examining to see if this is something that the committee would like further analysis done on. Mm-hmm. Finally, to conclude, the first point regarding the existing $10 allowance for new oil in CSSB 192 is that even with highly improbable and aggressive assumptions regarding the potential for new source development, in this case a 100,000 barrel a day field for a given company, the impact of the current allowance is almost undetectable. By increasing the time horizon and the value of the allowance, it's possible to increase the impact to a point where it becomes noticeable in specific cases for an existing producer, and even sizable in the case of a non-existing producer. But it's important to remember that this remains a highly unlikely scenario, because for the allowance to apply at all, it only applies to production above a previous year's level. And in this sense, for it to apply at all, it requires one to believe that we may see a 100,000 barrel a day new field anytime in the near future. If that's not the case, then the allowance under CSSB 192 fundamentally has no impact. Amendment B2 proposed in Senate Resources Committee, the tax holiday proposal, instead proposed a tax holiday on production above a target rate set based on that rolling average decline rate for the previous 3 years. Now, taking that decline curve approach is certainly a sounder one, but the impact of the proposal remains highly limited. The reason for that is twofold. One, that the allowance applies only to each year's production that exceeds the target based on the previous year, less the decline rate. And the fact that after a few years of production growth, because of the impact of the decline curve, one no longer has the benefit of being assessed against a declining base, but instead a flat base and eventually an increasing base. And each year it therefore gets harder and harder to do anything that would qualify for the tax holiday. If one wants to proceed down a path which incentivizes new production specifically as opposed to existing production, it seems to me the only way to provide such an incentive across the life cycle of a project is to do it in some combination of three ways. One is on some sort of fixed decline curve basis, and that could be complemented by a combination of two other ways, one being applying it to new areas, although that's limited in its application by the fact that so much potential new production would come from existing areas. But that would be one other possible supplementary way of assessing new production. And the third would be assessing it based on plans of development that are lodged in the regulatory process. That concludes my discussion for the moment of incentives for new production.
All right. We have questions for Janik. Okay. What we'll do is let him off the hook till 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. And we'll be back. See everybody at 9 a.m. Meeting adjourned.